WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A vigil is held outside the Fairfax County Government Center last night in memory of a man shot dead by Fairfax County police outside Tyson's Corner Center last month. Police chased 37-year-old Timothy Johnson outside the mall after they say he stole a pair of designer sunglasses from Nordstrom. Police say they did not find a gun when they searched the area the next day. His family's attorney, Carl Cruz, among those who want to know the justification for shooting him.
So it's just another deadly manhunt by Fairfax County Police for a pair of sunglasses. That's all it was.
He says the family needs unedited body cam footage. The police department, meanwhile, said yesterday it's hired the police executive research firm to investigate all officer-involved shootings that happened in the county since the start of 2021. Chief Kevin Davis says the review the firm's doing will not be focused on Johnson's case. He says it will be a broad examination of recent incidents to determine how the department can better prevent them going forward. Arlington County leaders aren't concerned that Amazon's decision to delay construction on the second phase of HQ2 will have negative financial impacts on the county. Board of Supervisors Chair Christian Dorsey says the local economy will get a boost when Phase 1 opens in June and workers are called back to the office.
This focus on returning those workers to the office for at least 3 days a week is incredibly important. And I hope that this becomes sort of a model for other companies who are wrestling with the same issue.
The head of the National Landing Business Improvement District says having 8,000 workers in their offices will enliven the neighborhood and support many small businesses. Former President Trump is the headline speaker today at CPAC. Mr. Trump's only confirmed competition in the 2024 presidential race so far. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley spoke last night.
We've lost a popular vote in the last 7 out of 8 presidential elections. Our cause is right, but we have failed to win the confidence of a majority of Americans. That ends now.
After her speech, some people followed her, shouting, quote, "We love Trump." Saving Private Ryan actor Tom Sizemore is dead at 61.
Sizemore, who starred in hundreds of TV and film roles like Black Hawk Down and Saving Private Ryan, died 2 weeks after suffering a brain aneurysm. On screen, Sizemore held his own against the best, evident by the Oscar buzz he generated as Sergeant Mike Horvath.
Someday we might look back on this and decide that Saving Private Ryan was the one decent thing we were able to pull out of this whole god-awful mess.
Carmen Roberts, Fox News.
WMAL Sports. Tonight, the Wizards play the Raptors, the Caps play the Sharks. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Mike Franciotti in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County, Maryland still have the accident and the detour set up. Montrose Road shut down in both directions east of I-270. Follow the posted detour around the scene there. Very serious single car crash. No issues reported on the Beltway, Interstate 95 BW Parkway. Between the Beltways, both moving very well. No issues in Virginia. Beltway traffic looking good. Interstate 66, the main lines of 395 and Interstate 95. No reports of any problems at this time. Now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Sunshine for your afternoon. It is going to be windy with wind gusts up to 45, 50 miles per hour. Temperatures upper 50s to near 60. Sunday, however, we will actually get to 60 degrees and the winds will be lighter. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
42 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL,
the Saturday morning update.
It is hour two of the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The Conservative Political Action Conference, the big one, continues at National Harbor today, John, and there is a headline act this afternoon.
There certainly is. Donald Trump will make his long-awaited speech to the annual conclave of conservatives, and there's particular attention paid to this because after a hiatus of a floating CPAC, going to various cities and at one point to Budapest, Hungary, the National Conservative Political Action Conference is back in the Washington area, albeit with a bit of a drive to the National Harbor in nearby Maryland. We're all awaiting the former president's speech, and sources tell this reporter that he's going to lay the lash of his oratory on the Republican considered his leading rival for the 2024 nomination, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, of course, he's had a few names for the Sunshine State governor suggested in the past that he's moving too soon to run for the top job and that he's an ingrate. Trump, of course, having weighed in for him in his first primary battle for the governorship, in which he emerged triumphant. Overall, it's not so much what Donald Trump will say, but that he is speaking ill of a major rival for nomination, and the whole world will be watching.
Nikki Haley had some impressive comments at CPAC. Her poll numbers have not been strong among Republicans, but she's just starting basically in this run. Do you see potential for Nikki Haley?
Yes, although I would say what just about every other political reporter concludes. The former South Carolina governor, first generation American, as she is the daughter of Indian immigrants, and UN ambassador under Donald Trump, is running for vice president. In other words, if you put her on a ticket with any of the leading contenders, Ron DeSantis or Mike Pence or Mike Pompeo or even Donald Trump, she balances the ticket nicely, and she got a warm reception at CPAC. There are some within the conservative element of the Republican Party who say she's too much of an internationalist and interventionist. And they said her brain trust is full of people who would be very much aggressive in involving the U.S. in foreign affairs. That said, people take a liking to her. She's got a pleasant personality, a story that includes recollections of seeing her own father mocked because he wore the traditional head garb of the Indian Sikh. And she is someone who bears watching.
Headline at CNN, Biden's about-face on the D.C. crime law angers Democrats. Tell us a little bit about the D.C. City Council, the Republicans, and now the president.
As someone who is about to pay boo-hoo large taxes in the District of Columbia, I do watch what goes on. The D.C. City Council passed a crime bill that, among other things, lowers the penalty for various crimes, including crimes with violence. One of these is carjacking, which has been on the rise in the nation's capital for some time. Since a year ago, when a crime bill was passed over the veto, I might add, of Mayor Muriel Bowser, herself a Democrat, crime has gone up 25%. In the District of Columbia in 2023. Overall, the weakening of penalties, one would conclude, is not doing the job of lowering the rate of crime here. Thus, the Republicans in Congress passed a new crime bill that eliminated many of the weakened penalties that came out of the council. Foul, cry Democrats. They see the District of Columbia as a state and an independent body, and Republicans overriding its independence and desire for home rule. Joe Biden, who supports making the District of Columbia the 51st state, did not have an adverse opinion. He is going to let the Republican bill pass and not veto it. And he specifically cited the watered-down carjacking penalty as a reason. In other words, Joe Biden was speaking to middle America and the people he wants to appeal to. in Congress. Democratic leaders may not like the idea of vetoing something that comes out of the D.C. City Council. Nationwide, Joe Biden may well be a candidate for re-election, and vetoing something that overrode a policy that was raising the crime rate doesn't look too bad. And he thinks that he sounds like a candidate for re-election more with each passing day.
Well, an interesting pair facing ethics violations in the Congress. George Santos and AOC. Oh, boy.
On Friday, the House Ethics Committee announced that Congressman George Santos, whose resume, net worth, source of campaign funding are all a question, would come under investigation. And according to a statement from the congressman's office, he's fully cooperating with the investigation. We will see what happens. At the same time, in a story first reported by Newsmax, New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is about to be cited by the Ethics Committee. In its initial report, it said there's a substantial reason to believe that she accepted impermissible gifts, ends of quote. This is likely to start an investigation. It refers, of course, to a dress worn at the gala in 2021 for the Met. Specifically, the white dress was designed by Brother Velas, a well-known fashion designer, with the words, "Tax the Rich," scrawled across the back in red ink, of all things. The value of this reportedly is in five figures and thus violates the services of over $5,000. That's the limit on gifts for members of Congress. The Congresswoman's office said they agreed that it was unacceptable and regrettable matters associated with the vendors. And since she was initially cited on this, the congresswoman has begun to pay back the cost of the dress. In either event, the betting is AOC will get away with, if nothing else, a fine or a slap on the wrist.
That was a year and a half ago, John. They're going to run out of the statute of limitations on this thing if they're not careful.
The idea that this would resurface today, after being reported by Newsmax initially more than a year ago, is a bit sobering about the cynicism constituents have for members of Congress.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. John, thank you.
My pleasure, Rick. We'll talk next week.
7:16, the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler, and we have got Cheryl Atkinson coming up next for you. We've got KT McFarland on the way. She is at CPAC. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us this morning. And a lot of interesting stuff to cover between now and the top of the hour, so stay with us. Right now, let's head over to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Mike Franciotti is there this morning.
Still have the detour set up along Montrose Road in Rockville, just east of I-270. The accident blocking lanes in both directions there. Beltway traffic, the outer loop, making your way toward Connecticut Avenue, moving through that work zone. A little bit of slow traffic there. No problems, 95 in the parkway between the beltways at this time. Route 50 moving well. In the district, we've got closures set up along Pennsylvania Avenue, Constitution Avenue for the Herstory 5K. No problems on the in the Commonwealth as far as all major highways are concerned. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Wind gusts up to 45-50 miles per hour by this afternoon. Wind advisory does stay in effect throughout today. Temperatures, however, a little bit better, upper 50s to near 60 degrees, and a little bit more sunshine for the afternoon. Tonight, temperatures falling into the upper 30s, and tomorrow, lighter winds and higher temperatures, near 60 for your Sunday afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
45 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 7:18 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She is the host of Full Measure. You can catch that every Sunday, 10 a.m. on ABC7. If you miss it in the morning, it's available on News Channel 8 throughout the day. Cheryl, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, sometimes in the mail we'll get a notice of some unclaimed funds. It may be from an old account somewhere or a paycheck that you never cashed. But the U.S. government might have some unclaimed funds of yours, and tell us about how to go about getting it.
Well, I love this story. You'll find out ways that you can ask questions in your state, because it turns out that there are all kinds of savings bonds, many of them in the World War II and post-World War II era, that were never collected, that have matured. And the rightful owners have passed on, or the original owners. Their heirs are entitled to them now but may not even know it. And we'll be talking about how there have been some people, including members of Congress and certain states, who've gone to the Treasury Department and tried to get them to let loose of these bonds because they could help in finding the owners and contacting the heirs. And believe it or not, the Treasury Department doesn't want to help do that. So there have been lawsuits with states fighting the federal government saying, let us, at least for the members of our states, the residents here, let us help find the owners of these savings bonds that are matured and the cash belongs in certain people's hands. So you hear all about that battle, but in some cases where some states have been successful, and then some advice on how to find out if maybe you have some cash waiting that a relative of yours had that you never had any idea existed.
The U.S. has a surprisingly long and controversial history with coerced sterilizations of women.
Well, let me digress for a minute, because there have been rumors for years, including from some of my African-American friends, that Planned Parenthood's founder, Margaret Sanger, was someone who was looking to cull out black population. And it sounded like a conspiracy theory, but as part of the story that I'll tell you about in a minute, I looked into that. And Planned Parenthood acknowledges the dark past of Margaret Sanger, their founder, and that indeed she spoke to the Ku Klux Klan and talked about using birth control as a way to make sure that what she considered or some considered undesirable people did not procreate as much as the so-called desirable people. And there is a long history of U.S. Doctors and public health officials and other entities taking actions that resulted in coerced sterilization and all kinds of questionable policies against women over the years. So we'll talk about that Sunday, but the reason I was looking into it is because of a whistleblower. She's a nurse that was working at a prison facility caring for illegal immigrants, holding them and caring for them in Georgia. And she says she discovered that some of these women were being taken away and coming back. Many of them didn't speak any English and had medical procedures forced upon them or given to them that they didn't know what had happened. And when the nurse looked at their records, she says some of them included gynecological procedures and sterilizations that the women did not consent to. So this started a whole chain of events with the nurse at the facility trying to ask about it, blow the whistle internally. She ultimately went to a whistleblower group, got the attention of Congress. And so Sunday on Full Measure, you'll hear the whole story, what happened at the facility, what she says happened, and also what happened to her when she blew the whistle.
Well, we all know the story about the Chinese spy balloon, but you may not know the story about some spy intrigue that happened at the Olympics in Beijing. Tell us about this one, Cheryl.
Well, this is a story Lisa Fletcher looked into for me, and I had not even heard of this. There's a reason for it, because it was kept quiet at the time. But it has to do with a Chinese dissident from the Tiananmen Square times who's been living in the U.S. for decades, who then had a child here who grew up to be a U.S. Olympic figure skating person who qualified to go to the Beijing Olympics. She's fantastic. But the both of them, before the Beijing Olympic Games, got wrapped up in this really amazing intrigue spy scandal that they couldn't tell anybody about at the time for a lot of different reasons. And the FBI even kept the case quiet till after the Olympic Games. So Lisa's going to tell us what that case involved, why it was kept so hush-hush, and kind of what it says about the China that exists today, one where they're really still doing a lot of things that they were doing decades ago when it comes to trying to keep their citizens in line and trying to crack down on dissidents even from years ago.
I'm very much intrigued. Cheryl Atkinson, Full Measure, tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:23 now on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. And I mentioned the debate over the Supreme Court, the president, the student loan debt relief, and some interesting audio here I want to get to in just a second. But the way the media is spinning this already, this is from an ABC News report. The Supreme Court's conservative majority on Tuesday appeared deeply skeptical of the legality of a White House plan to forgive $400 billion in federal student loans during the pandemic, even as the Biden administration vigorously defended its power and attacked the ability of six states to block it. So you can see where this is going. They're going to blame all of this on the conservatives and the evil conservatives on the Supreme Court. But if you had a little common sense going here, you'd step back and say, really? How many families have saved for their children's college education? You've probably heard this argument before, but it doesn't hurt to put it out there one more time, because this is going to get ugly when this comes down, whichever way it comes down, when the Supreme Court makes the decision, likely in June. But if you think about the fairness on this whole thing, how many families saved up for their children to go to college, paid the full tuition, sacrificed, gave up vacations, gave up a lot of things in life, so they could make sure that they put their kids through college, and they picked up the full tab. So how does that parent feel when all of a sudden the Biden administration comes in and said, well, we're going to forgive all the student loan debt for people who are out working now, that have gotten jobs from the college education they received, and we're just going to wipe out their student loan debt? I can see there is an angle on this where it would be nice if we could do that, but I don't think it's particularly fair just to walk in and say, oh, well, you borrowed money, so we're going to let you off the hook. But, oh, those other families that saved up so they didn't have to borrow money, well, who cares? What about them? Doesn't matter. I think we're lacking a little fairness in this discussion. Maybe there's a better way to go about it. I mean, think of the people who got student loan debts, but they're out in high-paying jobs. Why don't they pay the debt back? You'd think maybe that would be a reasonable approach. But again, just think about how you would feel if you saved and scrimped to put your kids through school, and you don't get any of that money back, but the student loan debt recipients get that money waived. Well, it's an interesting debate. Elizabeth Warren showed up in front of the Supreme Court the other day when the justices were having their deliberations. And Elizabeth Warren put it this way.
Let me be very clear about this. We are here today because President Biden has the legal authority to cancel student loan debt.
Well, she may think so, but as I recall, the Congress has the responsibility for, like, budgeting and fiscal issues, especially when you're talking a half a trillion dollars. And even Speaker Pelosi would agree with me on that.
People think that the President of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone, he can delay, but he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress.
That's pretty cut and dry, especially from Speaker Pelosi. Now, that was earlier. Wasn't this week. That was like last year. But I think it's pretty cut and dry. She laid it out. She and I agree on something. How about that? To sum it all up, the explanation behind all of this is in just a few words from Senator John Kennedy in Louisiana.
The truth is that common sense is illegal in Washington, D.C.
7:27, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
WMAL's news at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. They won't release it voluntarily, so Virginia's Attorney General Jason Miarez is asking for a subpoena to get a hold of the independent investigation into the Loudoun School District's handling of two sexual assaults. Inside Nova reports, the request says the AG's office needs the report as it prosecutes former Superintendent Scott Ziegler for three misdemeanors, including one alleging he lied about one of the assaults at a school board meeting. The family of a man shot dead by Fairfax County Police outside Tyson's Corner Center last month is calling for answers. 37-year-old Timothy Johnson's mother, Melissa, speaking at a vigil outside the county government center last night.
Timothy was unarmed, shoplifting.
She calls his killing an execution-style murder. Her attorneys demanding body cam footage be released right away. Department policy requires it be released within 30 days. Police are expected to make the names of the two officers involved public today. Former President Trump closing out CPAC today, the only other Republican to declare her candidacy in the 2024 presidential election. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley spoke yesterday.
Haley received a standing ovation and did not shy away from distinguishing herself from her former boss. That contrast didn't sit very well with some attendees who followed the former South Carolina governor after her speech, shouting, "We love Trump."
Fox's Anita Vogel. WMAL Sports. Tonight, the Wizards play the Raptors, the Caps play the Sharks. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather on WMAL. Here's Mike Franciotti in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Montgomery County, outer loop at Connecticut Avenue. We've got a report of an accident blocking the left-hand side of the roadway. Maybe some slow traffic there. Still have the road closure along Montrose Road, east of I-270. It is closed between Tower Oaks Boulevard and Tindenwood Drive. Follow the posted detour around the scene there. Going into Virginia, no reported issues on the Beltway at this time. Interstate 66 moving good from Haymarket to the Roslyn Tunnel, 395 and 95 as far south as Fredericksburg, moving at the posted speed. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Today, sunny and windy, highs near 60. Right now, 43 in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Making sense of your world.
I don't know where to begin.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Thanks for taking my call.
Making sense of the news.
7:37, the Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Tony Schaefer is with us. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
All right, we're going to hear a lot in the days ahead about Bakhmut and what may be the first significant Russian victory in over a year. What do we need to know about the reporting that we're going to hear about this? It's going to sound very bleak. How significant is a victory for Russia if they can pull it off?
Well, be skeptical of everything you hear and go to original sources as much as possible. Yeah, I mean, look, this is a propaganda war first, Rick, and everybody, I think, recognizes that. With that said, this is kind of analogous of a football game, third quarter. You know, you've got a team driving towards a touchdown, and you have one, which is, if the Russians pull this off, it's going to give them some morale boost, no doubt. And it's going to challenge the morale of Ukraine because they've been pouring everything into this. And we've talked about this several times. Like, you know, I'm simply looking at this as a numbers game at this point. I'm not taking sides. I'm just saying, you know, this is going to be putting some wind back in the Russian sails. And it's going to be something of interest by the fact that I keep hearing, oh, this is not a strategic interesting point. It's like, yeah, it is. It's a major transportation hub. And again, psychologically, the Ukraine said, we're not going to give this ground up. And if they're forced to give the ground up, obviously, that's something to pay attention to. So,
now, Sergei Lavrov, of course, is a Russian foreign minister. He met with U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken this week, and it was a brief meeting on Thursday, but it's the first time in a good while since the invasion, actually, that they actually talked. Any idea what the outcome of that is, if anything?
Well, it's interesting. It's hard to find anything on this because they've been downplaying it so much. So 3 points were essentially raised, as I understand it, between Blinken and Lavrov. First off is like, hey, end the war. It's like, yeah, we're not going to end the war. So that was the first point. Blinken says, end the war. It's like, yeah, we're not going to do that. Secondly, apparently Blinken did put a serious proposal on the table to get Paul Whelan, one of the prisoners still in Russia, back. The former Marine, you know, was captured back in 2018, so I guess there was some actual discussion about trying to get him back. Obviously, some feel that he, not Brittany Grenier, should have been the one traded. Just saying, I'm not here to editorialize, just saying that was on the table. And, of course, the issue regarding START, of them, the Russians, pulling out of the agreements to include the previous ones in the new START treaty. So those are the three big points. And I think the reason we're not hearing about it is because it didn't go well. You know, the Russians didn't give up anything. You just mentioned Bakhmut. The Russians feel they're, you know, kind of winning. So just saying, Rick, you know, based on my experience and talking to the Reagan folks who actually did this for a living back in the 80s, the Russians aren't going to budge. There's no reason for them to budge. And the Lavrov meeting, I think, reflected that as much as anything.
And was there any talk of China in that conversation
so
that you heard of?
The last point, yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up separately. So they warned China that if you start providing lethal support to Ukraine, that's a quote-unquote red line. What's interesting is that people I listen to include Gordon Chang saying, well, it's already happening. You've already got big old cargo airplanes leaving Beijing with supplies going to Russia. So I think it may be one of those cases that, the horse is already out of the barn, and they're just trying to basically threaten the Russians, again, with no leverage. I do believe that China is already giving some level of support to Russia based on the previously disclosed agreements to cooperate. So I think the issue becomes blatant lethal support that the Chinese would be giving Russia. And at this point, Rick, I don't think, again, the Chinese have anything to fear because they just don't believe that anything the Biden administration says is credible.
I want to turn to the Havana syndrome, which has been in the news this week. Now, just a quick kind of a summary on this. Over 1,000 cases of a, quote, anomalous health incident. 1,000 cases are studied, and these are primarily U.S. Embassy workers in Havana, and they're apparently these sound pulses or some kind of electrical energy that is causing traumatic brain injuries and other, you know, long-term effects. And apparently we can't figure out what's causing that. The intelligence community issuing a report that shatters the long-disputed theory that hundreds of U.S. personnel were targeted and sickened by an enemy wielding energy waves as a weapon. So if it wasn't something along those lines of somebody sending out energy waves, what is it? What explains that?
Well, there is no explanation. That's part of the issue. It's like, okay, it's not that, then what is it? Well, you've really not done your job then. It's like, okay, you're trying to say that something that people have perceived as being the issue is not, and yet you have the physical results. I mean, the physical ailments, the damage is undisputable. So how would you do that? So at this point, I don't trust the report. There's any number of systems and technologies we've developed for purposes of crowd control and essentially being able to use directed energy. We are way further ahead, Rick, on directed energy than our government wants to admit, just saying. With that said, since we understand some technologies, I do believe that there's still a chance that some of those were used against the folks in Havana. I don't know. But I'm just saying I dispute the results of that report, and I think we're going to come to find that there's more to this story than we know at this point.
Well, the symptoms included like ringing in the ears, pressure in the head, nausea, headaches, acute discomfort, and long-term effects.
I know. It's like going to a Democrat convention.
But that doesn't just come from, you know, hanging out in a nice, warm, tropical country. I mean, something's got to be causing that. You would think with our technology, both medical and intelligence technology, somebody could figure this one out.
I think we know more. Yeah, I think we know more. They're just not saying it, so just saying.
Yeah, I mean, is it, possibly we're protecting some adversary that we don't want to have a conflict with. We just want to compete with.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention China, but maybe China.
Don't say that. Don't. Merrick Garland was on the Hill, of course,
goodness.
The Attorney General, and boy, that was not one of his better days. It was such a day that he took off and went to Ukraine at the end of the week. But we have a little bit of the audio of Ted Cruz, and they've covered a whole range of areas. But here's just one of the dust-ups with Ted Cruz and the Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Have you brought a single case against any of these protesters threatening the judgment, justices under 18 U.S.C. Section 1507. Have you brought even one?
Senator, you asked me whether I sat on my hands, and quite the opposite. I sent 70 United States Marshals.
Let me try again. Has the Department of Justice brought even a single case under this statute? It's a yes, no question. It's not a give a speech on the other things you did.
Woo. Wow.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
So, first off, as a member of law enforcement in Virginia, and I work for Sheriff Dave Decatur down in Stafford, I'm appalled that you have the senior law enforcement officer in the nation essentially being the chief enforcer of Democrat policy. And that's what really came clear during this questioning of Ted Cruz to him. And, again, I think he lied under oath. I know for a fact there's U.S. Marshals, had they been allowed under the rules they were deployed to protect the justices, would have probably made, maybe 36 arrests of those who are actually threatening the lives of those beyond the one guy who did threaten a life with a gun and tools. So, let me ask you, maybe the audience knows, who do you go and ask for enforcement of lying under oath when the guy in charge of the Justice Department lies under oath? Because that's what he did. Because those U.S. Marshals can't charge people, and he was saying, they can't charge people. They can arrest people and make recommendations. DOJ has to make the charges. So it was completely a fraud from the perspective of Merrick Garland's testimony. And it's like, yeah, what do you do when Bill Barr or Merrick Garland becomes the chief thug, basically overseeing a political theory instead of beliefs, instead of law, enforcing the law? And that's what Ted Cruz exposed there with him.
Well, it's just interesting that there's so much talk about the weaponization, and they say that's a conspiracy theory of the Republicans. There's no weaponization, but they do so many things that just make it look so much like it's weaponized. You can't make this stuff up. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as always, thank you very much. What's on the podcast this weekend?
Well, first off, before I say that, I've been at CPAC, and I really want to say thank you to our audience who came up and talked to me and say, hey, look, I get up and listen to you and Rick, so I just want to do a shout out to them who, you know, I had probably, and I'm not kidding, a dozen folks come up and approach me and say how we are, who they turn to listen to. So thank you all
very
for
nice.
Listening to us. Right, Rick? I mean, it's been great.
No, thank
and,
you all.
And
for appreciate
us,
that too.
Yeah. Oh, it's been wonderful. And then, podcasts, we're just kind of rerunning the Adam Baldwin, mother animal from Full Metal Jacket, talking about gun safety, because, you know, a guy named Alec Baldwin didn't practice that, just saying, and issues regarding the Second Amendment. So you can check it out on our websites, projectsentinel.net and londoncenter.org.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you so much. 7:47, Saturday Morning Update. KT McFarland coming up next. She's at CPAC this morning, but first we will head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Mike Franciotti is there this morning.
In Montgomery County, the inner loop of the Beltway, as you make your way over toward Connecticut Avenue, got the work zone set up there. I don't believe any travel lanes are blocked, but just some off and on slowing. Still have the road closure, Rockville, Montrose Road, still shut down in both directions, just east of I-270. No issues along the ICC at this time. 95 and the Parkway both moving well. The John Hanson Highway, both east and westbound, moving well. No reports of any problems on the major highways in the Commonwealth. Annandale report of a crash, Little River Turn Pike at Heritage Drive. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch Center forecast.
Wind gusts up to 45, 50 miles per hour by this afternoon. Wind advisory does stay in effect throughout today. Temperatures, however, a little bit better, upper 50s to near 60 degrees, and a little bit more sunshine for the afternoon. Tonight, temperatures falling into the upper 30s, and tomorrow, lighter winds and higher temperatures, near 60 for your Sunday afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
43 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:49 on the Saturday Morning Update. 7:52, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us from CPAC this morning. Of course, she is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She's also a board member of the American Conservative Union. KT, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us. And there's been a lot of attention paid to CPAC this week, and a lot on the domestic side that we're seeing in the news clips and things. But I wanted to get a sense of the foreign policy side, and I know that you speak at CPAC each year, and you spoke on Ukraine and Russia. And what do you see as we go into this weekend and you know, Bakhmut, the potential for a Russian victory there? What do you see as the latest in the Russia-Ukraine conflict and how you addressed it at CPAC?
Well, the interesting thing at CPAC is that, you know, you get everybody from all over the country, and you get all the sort of ranges of the entire conservative movement, social conservatives, economic conservatives, national security conservatives. And when I talked about Ukraine, Russia, and as others did, there was a real sense that the people, the sort of base of the Republican Party and the conservative movement, they're really concerned that the Biden administration is going to drag us in to a global war, and with no particular plan for how they see this war ending. So what I talked about was, I think we're in a stalemate. I think Russia thought it could easily win, be in and out, couple of days, pro-Russian government, didn't happen. So now they've got, they're throwing everything they have. They're getting help from China. But the difference is that that Russia now can fight forever because of Biden's war on American fossil fuels, the simple supply and demand. The prices of energy, oil and natural gas, have gone way up. That means Russia, which exports oil and natural gas, which relies for those on that export revenue for everything, took a lot of extra money. So they can fight forever. They're, in fact, their economy is better now than it was a year ago. Their economy is growing faster than the economy of Great Britain, for goodness sakes. And so the Russians fight on forever, and they're not going to, you know, they want unconditional surrender. And on the other hand, you have the Biden administration, which also is pushing for unconditional surrender on the Russians, and they even pushing for regime change that Putin would be removed for office. So where we're stuck, we're in a deadlock situation where the one of two options seems to be the only way you go. On one hand, either Russia just completely destroys Ukraine and kills every man, woman, and child in the country and destroys the civilization, similar to what Putin did with Chechnya 20 years ago. Or on the other hand, the war escalates and NATO gets involved and the U.S. gets involved. And that was clearly the audience at CPAC does not want option two. So I proposed option three, which is the one in the middle, that the way you defeat Russia is not on the battlefield, but on the economic playing field. And if Biden would only stop his war on American fossil fuels, we could produce again. We would be energy dominant in the world. We would drive the price of oil and natural gas down. And Russia would have to stop fighting in 6 months because they wouldn't have the money to pay for, you know, wars are expensive. They would not have the money to pay for it. So if you have that situation where Russia was bankrupted, couldn't fight on, then you have a negotiated solution. Not everybody gets everything they want, but then you could allow Ukraine would win the peace. You know, if neither side can win the war, and I don't think Russia wins the peace, Ukraine could win the peace. That's the only way I see out of this, where we get what we want and we don't have to escalate to a bigger war that nobody wants. So how does Ukraine win the peace? Well, within 5 years of the fighting stopping, Ukraine will be a fully incorporated economy into Europe, fully integrated, because countries are going to push $1 trillion into Ukraine to develop their agricultural resources, their natural resources. Ukraine will be a boom town of Western investment, and it'll also connect with the West, with their security. I mean, maybe even join NATO. Meanwhile, 5 years after the fighting stops, where's Russia? As long as energy prices are low, Russia's bankrupt, and nobody is going to rush into Russia to invest in Russian industry to build a Russian economy. So 5 years from the fighting stopping, Ukraine's in a terrific position. But somehow the Biden administration doesn't seem to get that. They think we want unconditional surrender. We're going to fight it out on the battlefield. And Putin, of course, has no other option than to continue to fight it out on the battlefield.
We just need to send an MP3 of this discussion down to 1600 Pennsylvania, and maybe somebody will wake up down there. We've only got about 3 minutes left, KT, and I wanted to get your read on Nigel Farage's speech, because that's one of the highlights, I understand, at CPAC.
Yeah, you know, everybody's focused on, oh, well, what happened with Nikki Haley? What happened with Mike Pompeo? Ron DeSantis isn't here. Mike Pence isn't here. President Trump is coming this afternoon. That's the one everybody wants to hear. But to me, the really fascinating conversation was Nigel Farage. Now, for people who don't know, he's a British politician, former Tory, founded the Independence Party in Britain. But he's the guy who really pushed for and is the driving force behind Brexit. And I've known him for a long time. He's a dynamic speaker, and he's a happy warrior. And he said what I think a lot of conservatives have been feeling since November. He said, look, you're all down in the dumps. We didn't win the election like we thought. We didn't take the Senate. We barely took the House. And so we're really kind of, we don't understand it because the country's in a horrible shape, right? Economic decline, inflation, a self-induced national security crisis after another visibly failing president. And why didn't the rest of the country vote the way Florida did, with an overwhelming and resounding victory for Republicans? And Nigel Farage said, you know, in democracies, especially the United States, it's like a pendulum, and it swings back and forth. And when the pendulum gets to the final worst situation, then the American people have had enough, and the pendulum starts to turn back. And he thinks that the pendulum has started turning back. He said the woke far-left socialist agenda, conservatives are sick of it, and so are the people in the European countries. The example he gave was Scotland in the last couple of weeks, where the far-left socialist woke agenda first minister has been kicked out. And he said when he had first started coming to CPAC 5-7 years ago, he said there were no foreigners there. There were no foreign leaders. It was just Americans from all over the country. He said, but look around the room now. And he said, we now have, it's an international movement. There's a CPAC Japan, a CPAC Korea, a CPAC Hungary, a CPAC Brazil, a CPAC Mexico. And all those countries have sent representatives to participate in CPAC this year, and most especially the conservative movement in Italy, where they have newly elected a conservative woman who's making enormous gains in Italy, of all places. So he said, so don't be discouraged. You know, we're doing pretty good. We just need one more election. And then I think the Americans will do as Churchill said. They always do the right thing after they've tried everything else.
Wonderful insight. And we have another day of CPAC today. So, KT, we'll get kind of a wrap from you next weekend when you can put it all perspective, especially after a former President Trump speaks this afternoon. KT McFarland, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thanks for joining us this morning from CPAC.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Reminder, Garden Sense, 1 o'clock this afternoon. Heather Curtis has the 8 o'clock news next.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.